Prahlad Maharaj said,
Mataki
inclination.
Never.
Krishna
unto Lord Krishna.
Parataha, from the instructions of others. Swataha,
from their own understanding.
Va, either. Mittaha,
from combined effort.
Avipadyita
is developed.
Grihavatanam,
a person's too addicted
to the materialistic bodily conception of life. Ananta, uncontrolled. Gobihi,
by the senses.
Vishatam,
entering.
Tamisram,
hellish life.
Punaha,
again.
Punaha,
again.
Jarvata,
things already chewed.
Jarvananam,
who are chewing.
Translation. Prahlad Maharaj replied, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress toward hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In this verse, the words Matirana Krishna refer to devotional service rendered to Krishna. So-called politicians, erudite scholars, and philosophers who read Bhagavad Gita try to twist some meaning from it to suit their material purposes. But their misunderstandings of Krishna will not yield them any profit, because such politicians, philosophers, and scholars are interested in using Bhagavad Gita as a vehicle for adjusting things materially. For them, constant thought of Krishna or Krishna consciousness is impossible. Matirna Krishna. As stated in Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, text 55, Bhaktimam Avijanati. Only through devotional service can one understand Krishna as he is. The so-called politicians and scholars think of Krishna as fictitious. The politician says that his Krishna is different from the Krishna depicted in Bhagavad Gita. Even though he accepts Krishna and Rama as the supreme, he thinks of Rama and Krishna as impersonal because he has no idea of service to Krishna. Thus, his only business is puna punas charvita charvamanam, chewing the chewed again and again. The aim of such politicians and academic scholars is to enjoy this material world by their bodily senses, with their bodily senses. Therefore, it is clearly stated here that those who are grahavrata, those whose only aim is to live comfortably with a body in the material world, cannot understand Krishna. Two expressions, grihavrata and charvipacharvananam, indicate that a materialistic person tries to enjoy sense gratification in different bodily forms, life after life, but is still unsatisfied. In the name of personalism, this-ism, or thatism, such persons always remain attached to the materialistic way of life, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter, text 44, Bhogeshvarya prasaktanam taya pararitya chetasam vyavasyatmika buddhi samadhav navatiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service of the Supreme Lord does not take place. Those who are attached to material enjoyment cannot be fixed in devotional service to the Lord. They cannot understand Bhagavan Krishna or his instruction, Bhagavad Gita, Adanta Gopiya Ravishatam Tamishram. Their path actually leads toward hellish life. As confirmed by Rishabhadev, Mahatsevam Dwaram Ahur Vimukte. One must try to understand Krishna by serving a devotee. The word mahat refers to a devotee. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakatim asutaho vajantinanyamanaso gitva bhutadim avyam. O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, text 13. A Mahatma is one who is constantly engaged in devotional service 24 hours a day, as explained in the following verses. Unless one adheres to such a great personality, one cannot understand Krishna. Hiranyakashipu wanted to know where Prahlad had gotten this Krishna consciousness. Who had taught him? Prahlad sarcastically replied, "My dear father, persons like you never understand Krishna. One can understand Krishna only by serving a mahat, a great soul. Those who try to adjust material conditions are said to be chewing the chewed. No one has been able to adjust material conditions, but life after life, generation after generation, people try and repeatedly fail. Unless one is properly trained by a mahatma, or an unalloyed devotee of the Lord, there is no possibility of one's understanding Krishna and his devotional service." So again, So Omagana Timirandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Un Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So Prahlad Maharaj here is responding to Hiranyakashipu's question, basically. What was his question? Do you know? Keshav?
Is Krishna God?
No.
Where did you learn about Krishna?
Where did you learn about Krishna? Where did you get this information from, you rascal? And it's interesting that Prahlad Maharaj never really mentions the name of his guru to Hiranyakashipu. You know, he talks about serving a Mahatma and everything like that, but he doesn't say, "Oh, it was Narada Muni, you know. I was in the womb of my mother, and, you know, it was really cool. He was preaching, and that's how I learned." So the reason for that is that he's concerned, compassionate towards his father, because if you actually preach the glories of the Lord inappropriately to those who are faithless, guess what? It's an offense on chanting Hare Krishna. He's following that particular rule in this particular instance. You know that rule? Don't preach the glories of the Lord to those who are faithless. And the reason you don't preach the glories of the Lord to those who are faithless is they'll commit offenses. I mean, there's devotee's relationship with his guru is very dear to him. You know, just like sometimes I see devotees, they go out with pictures of Prabhupada on their bead bags or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you know, it's something like, I mean, of course you want everyone to know about Prabhupada, but the relationship should be so dear that we shouldn't just like put him on our clothes, you know, tattoos on our arms and things like that, like people do. And it's described that one shouldn't even reveal one's worshipable deity, Ishta Devata, you know, because it's very dear to one, or reveal one's inner realizations. You know, Guru, of course, we talk about Prabhupada, but reveal one, you know, whatever is very close to one's heart, one doesn't talk about in public, especially with those who may criticize. Just like someone may be married, and they have a very nice relationship with their wife and husband. They don't talk about those things publicly. I mean, because nowadays you've got Facebook, which is completely against all etiquette, isn't it? They post things about their relationship. You know, they show people holding hands and kissing. And sometimes, you know, even I look at the Facebook page of disciples and it's like, "Oh my God. I remember they were sitting down at a fire sacrifice. And what are they doing with that boy on Facebook?" But that's not That's not polite culture. I mean, it's like you actually see in Bengal when the culture people come to the temple with their wives, they're not holding hands or anything like that. You know, the ladies are a little bit behind the husband. You ever seen that? Behind the husbands. But now Western culture is so much affecting the Indian culture that sometimes we go around Govardhan and there's a boy and girl holding hands, you know. And so it's like a Bollywood movie, circumambulating Govardhan. So anyway, so the point is, getting back to the point first, is that Prahlad Maharaj understands, you know, what his father can take. In other words, he's not just being sarcastic, you know. Sarcastic, usually when we're sarcastic, you know, because we think someone's a jerk. Oh, Hiranyakashipu is a jerk. But anyway, or we have a negative attitude towards someone. We just want to just put them off, isn't it? Someone asks me a question, you know, they say, Maharaj, what type of prasadam do you like? You know, I say, anything. Because I don't want them to bug me. So then, in the same way, Prahlad Maharaj is not doing that. Prabhupada mentions he's sarcastic. He's using sarcasm, but he's still compassionate to Hiranyakashipu. And he's preaching in a way that perhaps Hiranyakashipu can understand. You know, it's a very practical way. He's not talking about his spiritual master. He's not talking about God here, right? He's talking about two things. That you're always going to be repeating the same thing over and over again, Dad. That's Purnak Purnas Charavita Charavananam. In other words, it's called chewing the already chewed. Sometimes the example I give when I'm talking about this class is like when I was young, sometimes we'd ride the bus, you know, and then someone would stick bubble gum under the seat, yeah. And under the seat. And can you imagine picking it up and then putting it in your mouth and chewing something already been chewed? Or even normal gum, because when I was a kid, I used to chew gum. After a while, there's no more sugar left in it. And it's just like you keep chewing it, hoping that there's some happiness. So it's like that. I mean, you keep doing the same thing over and over again. And even one great Western scientist said, Albert Einstein, he said, the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing and think you're going to get a different result. And that's chewing at the already chewed. So that's practical. That's practical preaching to Hiranyakashipu. So he'll understand that. You know, you keep doing the same thing, Dad, and you're frustrated, angry. You know, and if you're angry, you're not going to be happy. You know, Tamishram, you're in the mode of ignorance. He talks about the mode of ignorance here. If you're in the mode of ignorance, there's no happiness. You know, at least there's passion and there's mixed happiness and ignorance and happiness and distress, goodness. And so therefore he's trying to bring his father up to a higher level. So this is how we should be dealing with people. This is a practical preaching verse, which means we give people, we understand their, first of all, we understand who they are. Before you can preach to someone or reach out to someone, you have to really know who they are, what their level of spiritual advancement is, what their interests are. It's not that you just sit in some seat somewhere and you just like blast someone for being in Maya. Or you just like tell them about Krishna's intimate activities. Because one has to have the adhikar. Here we're talking about adhikar. You know, the right to be able to hear about a certain subject matter. Even amongst devotees. Sometimes, you know, we hear someone giving class and they're speaking about such intimate things. That means, you know, Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, from the Govinda Lilamrita or some other intimate literature, or even, even from Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, parts, they're concentrating on parts of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that deal with very intimate exchanges between Radha and Krishna, rather than reading the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita with Srila Prabhupada's purports. So that's inappropriate, and it's dangerous. You're actually driving the person away from Krishna by doing that. Just like Hiranyakashipu would be driven further away, of course he was pretty far away, but he would be driven further away from devotional service according to Prahlad Maharaj's mentality, that if he told him anything about Narada Muni, because you commit offense against the great devotee, what? You are finished. You know, had he said, you know, hey, it was Narada, don't blame me, then Hiranyakashipu would just like you say, not Narada, this, that, you know, he's a cheater, he's a rascal. I mean, committing offense against devotees is very dangerous. Even if, there's a story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, even if you're Krishna's or Lord Chaitanya's mother, if you commit offense against a devotee, you're in trouble. Right? There's that story that Sachimata, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mother, she had another son before Lord Chaitanya, his name was Vishwarup. And Vishwarup was very fond of going over to Dvaitacharya's house and hearing about Krishna, which is nice, because Vishwarup is considered an expansion of Lord Nityananda Balaram. So what happened is that he was going over there, and then one day Sachimata and Jagannath Mishra were talking about getting Vishwarup married. And in India, the walls are very thin. This is like a straw house or something like that. So Vishwarup was like either outside or in the next room. He's hearing about his parents talking about getting married. And he said, goodbye. He didn't say goodbye. He just disappeared in the middle of the night. His name became Shankarananda Swami. Anyway, later on he left this world, but there's a whole story about that. So he heard his parents talking about it, and he just left. And Sachimata, what did she do? She blamed Advaitacharya. She said this, Advaita, he's not Advaita, he's Dvaita. As that means, Advaita means one. But when you say someone is Dvaita, that means they're two-faced. They're a liar. Like our nice president of the United States. He's not only Dvaita, he's, I don't know what the word for like, 100 is, you know, in Sanskrit. But anyway, he's all over the place. And he hires nice lawyers that lie for him. So anyway, so Sachimata, getting back to the story, was accusing Dvaitacharya of just being a liar, a cheater. And then what happened, one day Lord Chaitanya was giving everyone pure love of God in Shiva Sangha. And he said, this person shall have pure love of God, that person shall have pure love of God. And the devotees asked, what about Sachimata? Can't she have pure love of God? And Lord Chaitanya said, no. She's committed offense against Advaitacharya. Nada. She's committed offense against him. And Advaitacharya, he was shocked at that. And Sachimata, she immediately dove down and touched Advaitacharya's feet, and Dvaitacharya didn't consider it was offense. But Prabhupada would sometimes comment that even if the Vaishnava forgives, then the dust of his feet may not forgive. In other words, that basically means that Krishna doesn't forgive, because a Vaishnava is always forgiving. Vaishnava is jata shatrava. Vaishnava has no enemies. Vaishnava is not vengeful. Like sometimes, isn't the case if you want to get even with someone? Yeah. That's vengeful. Ah, you're going to get even. Justice. Actually, in the Bible it says justice belongs to God, doesn't belong to us. So what I've seen is actually if someone does something bad that, you know, against my interests or something like that, I just let Krishna handle it. I don't go after them. I said, you know, Krishna, you're the one to pass judgment. I can't pass judgment on anyone. So anyway, so basically, Sachimata, by taking the dust of the feet of Advaitacharya, got pure love of God at that point. So that's the point. If you commit offenses, and also Sahajaism is committing an offense too. Like if you preached something too high to people and they become sahajas. Sahaja means to take things cheaply. In Vrindavan there's so many of these sahajas. Some of them think that by altering the material body you can understand you're a gopi. You know, just like confusing matter with spirit. You could become a gopi by putting lipstick on. You know, can you imagine? And so you got the ugliest gopis I've ever seen sometimes walking around Vrindavan. I said, these are gopis. Krishna better look for, someone else to dance with. Because I don't think a blind person would dance with these people. So anyway, but that's an offense. To think that the spiritual body is the same as the material body, or to think that the Lord's body is material, it's actually an offense. So you're taking people away from Krishna. So it's important to understand, getting back to the point I'm making, to understand what someone's mentality is so they can give them Krishna in whatever way. And that means when you're distributing books, you can explain things in such a way. So Prahlad Maharaj is setting a perfect example. And apart from that, it is a fact that in this material world, we keep doing the same thing and we keep thinking we're going to become happy by doing it. Right? It's like we eat every day. We should eat every day. I'm not saying we shouldn't eat. But we just like look forward and think, oh, this is going to give me happiness. And after that, we get a stomach ache. 244, Bhogeshvari Prasatanam Taya Pritha Chaitasam Vyavasayatmika Abhudhyam Samadho Navadhyata. Vyavasayatmika Abhudhyam means the one point of determination or intelligence. You'll never, samadho navadhiyate, you'll not be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So in other words, you have to come to the point of understanding there's no hope in this material world. Just like, it's hopeless. And that takes some time. Otherwise, we're always hoping that something is going to work out, and something's going to make us happy. Another example I sometimes use is about chewing the already chewed or becoming frustrated, is that sometimes in the Western world, the children wake up on Christmas Day and they become so happy thinking that their presents are going to give them happiness, and they open up the presents and 3 hours later they're unhappy. Or someone goes to the movies. When I was a young devotee, we used to distribute books at the movies, and we would understand that the best time to distribute books is before people go to the movies, because they have some expectation about the material world, about the movie. But when they come out, they're agitated and angry. Same thing with Disney World. When they go in, they're just like, really, we're going to see Mickey Mouse and whatever other obnoxious creatures there. And a mouse. Can you imagine if a mouse ran across the floor? What would you do? Oh, isn't he cute? So instead, people are spending millions or at least hundreds, thousands of dollars to go see a mouse. So, and be entertained. That's the illusion of the material world. Anyway, so people are coming out, they're very angry. And another illusion they have in these amusement parks, like Disneyland, is they hide how long the line is. In other words, I don't know if you heard my class the other day, but I went to Disneyland, Disney World one time with Jayapataka Maharaj. You heard about that. And, you get on this line, you think, oh, we're going to go on this fantastic ride. And the line is such, they hide it around the corner so you don't see. And then you go around one corner. Oh my God, it's really long. And then you go around another corner. Oh my God. If you spend so much money, spend most of your day online sweating in the hot Florida sun. Anyway, anyone here has been to Disney World? No. You have. So you're fortunate, most fortunate. So, Cinder Copal. So, and then when you finally go on the ride, it's just like 5 minutes, and you're waiting for the happiness to happen. And then you get off the ride and get on another line. That's chewing the already chew. Or you go on a ride that presses you against the wall with 10 G's. And you're thinking, this is happiness. You understand these rides where they press you against? You must have been on these rides.
There's one in Manapa.
Yeah. And then, or you go on these roller coasters. And I remember going on once and I was just, it's like also like chewing the chew, because you go on it once and as it's going up you think, oh, this is great, we're going up. When you go down, everyone is screaming. All the ladies, they're screaming. And you say, oh my God, this is horrible. I think I left my stomach at the top of the top of the hill. And then people, that's the happiness in this world, you know. And then when you get off, you go, wow, that was great. Because you're relieved. So it's just like, Boga Tiaga. You understand? Happiness, distress, or renunciation. Happiness, distress. Chapalasuka. It's so flickering. And we're just like that donkey chasing after the carrot. You know, that's an example. That's us. You know, it's incredible. You think, you know, I've been chasing after the carrot for the last 70 years. And I haven't gotten the carrot yet. I'm an ass. You know, so anyway, so enough renunciation for all of you. So any questions or comments?
Well, I just had a question. You're making a reference about giving classes appropriately.
Yeah.
The speaker sometimes may choose to have some material experiences to relate to the audience.
Yeah, that's
well.
Good.
And there are various speakers that may be non-Krishna conscious who have some nice philosophies, and I've had devotees say, oh, you should listen to so-and-so, and they're not Prabhupada, etc. Bhagavatam is very clear on that, and says that words that, it's like about like a pilgrimage place for cause, if you don't, you know, understand, you know, going to Prabhupada's books, etc. So what's the right balance? What's the way to approach that in an intelligent way without getting sucked into these non-devotee sources of knowledge and thinking and analysis and debate that we may find useful to use in Krishna's service, but not get sucked into?
Well, it's a fine line, obviously. I mean, sometimes we can use, just like I'm using these material examples to illustrate the point. Prabhupada sometimes use material examples to illustrate the point, too. So it's a fine line. You don't want to get too much into material examples. You want to always refer to Shastra, but I think we stick to the Siddhanta. The conclusion is the important thing. Just like many of the biographies of saints, it's called hagiographies. You ever heard of that word?
Yes.
They're actually a lot of made-up stuff. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that. He said that about the Bhakti Ratnakara and other literatures. Yet still he had people read the literatures. Why? Because the Siddhanta was presented. You know, the perfect conclusion. And, you know, Siddhanta and the Bhavas were presented properly. So that's why he had read. But he said, you know, there's just very little actual factual information in those books. So, you know, sometimes there's stories that illustrate some points. That you have to judge something by the results, whether it actually helps one understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness more. And especially if you're preaching to or speaking to people who don't know anything about Krishna, if you quote too much, it just appears really weird to them. Especially if you start throwing a lot of Sanskrit out at them. It's extremely weird. Unless you're so pure that it doesn't matter. I remember when I first met Prabhupada, this is an interesting story. We took Prabhupada, this is in 1971, to lecture in the middle of the Plaza of the Americas at a university. It was a university in Gainesville, Florida, a big university. We had scheduled, and Prabhupada was standing on a platform with a microphone. And one of the first things Prabhupada started talking about was Mahavishnu and Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Shiradakshaya Vishnu. And I was just a new devotee. I mean, I hardly understood it. And here he is to university students. And I was just thinking, this is really far out. How are these people going to be able to understand? You know, Can you imagine? I mean, like an introductory lecture to Krishna consciousness, that there's Mahavishnu from his breathing and pores come all the universes and they expand. And then Garbhadaksha Vishnu enters into each universe in the Garbhadak ocean. He's floating on top of Seshanag. And then from his navel comes the first person in the universe. And then Garbhadaksha Vishnu expands as the Shiradaksha Vishnu and enters into every atom and everyone's heart. And I was thinking, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into, you know? Because I was just new, you know, basically wet behind the ears, as they say. But Prabhupada was so pure, you know. What can I say? If you have that purity, I mean, you can... Whoops. But, you know, I'm not on that level. So I'm really careful about who I speak to, how I speak to them. You know, I try to understand someone before I speak to them. And that's usually I ask them, you know, how are you doing? Are you interested? Are you having any questions? And even with devotees, it's good to know what their interests are too. Because if I start just speaking about Govardhan, which is my favorite subject matter, or Hanuman, they may not be interested. Of course, in Fiji, everyone's interested in Hanuman. But so it's important to keep their attention too. Because, like, you know, occasionally it's like,
I'm just tired.
It's
knowing your audience.
What?
Knowing your audience.
Yeah, knowing your audience is extremely important. And addressing them accordingly. And so, you know, I'll speak differently if I'm at a university. I'll be very careful because it'll drive people away if we talk about the wrong things. You know, if you talk about how you have to become renounced from this world and your girlfriend is Maya, you know, which is true, not that she is Maya, you're Maya, attached to her. I mean, she's not Maya, obviously. But if you say, you know, there's certain things, if you're in university, you can't just come out and say, this boy and girl stuff is not nonsense, you know, you shouldn't even see each other until you get married. Can you imagine if I say that at university? I mean, I mean, certain things, we don't say something that's not true. We don't say, oh, it's so nice, you're kissing during the program. You know, I don't say that. But there's really certain things you just don't say. Like nowadays in the university, there's, you know, political correctness. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certain things I do say, you know, that are not so politically correct. And of course, I preach against abortion and stuff like that. But if you see two young men coming to the program and they're married or, anyway, they're, you understand. You don't start talking against homosexuality. I mean, it's just like, you got to have some discrimination. Like, Prabhupada does make comments about different things that are politically incorrect, but you can't present them in every instance, or else it'll drive people away. And Prabhupada also said, because he was older, he could say certain things and get away with them that we can't get away with. So it requires some discrimination. Prabhupada was very bold sometimes. I remember when Prabhupada went to meet them, went to the palace in Paris, and the mayor of Paris was coming to meet him, that usually the etiquette is, maybe you heard the story, that you're supposed to stand up when the mayor comes in. But Prabhupada didn't. and all the politicians were saying, whatever, you got to stand up. Prabhupada said, I'm not going to stand up for this mayor. You know, so I thought Prabhupada was bold, but, you know, he's a different platform than the rest of us. And I don't think we can imitate these different things. I don't, Prabhupada speaking or Prabhupada's mannerisms or anything like that, it's not for us. So I'm careful. And then sometimes I'll use material examples to illustrate a point, just to help people understand, because too much quoting is not really going to help. is not going to help people come to Krishna consciousness, you know, if they're people who are new. So, any other questions? Questions, comments, arguments, problems? No. Everyone's so quiet. I can hear a pin drop. All right. Oh, yes.
Excuse me, Gurudev. You know how we are saying that everything here is an illusion?
No, it's not an illusion. We're an illusion.
I mean, we are an illusion. So
yeah.
Day in, day out, we are in touch with it.
Yeah.
So how do we, even though we hear about it that it is an illusion, but still because we are so much in touch with it, we accept it as real.
Yeah.
How do we train the mind to actually to accept that that?
Well, it's good to have some metaphorical metaphors are good because they actually help us understand things. Treat it like someone who's programming a computer. That you program a computer, you know, let's say if you're working with virtual reality or something like that. You know that it's actually an illusion, but you know that's your service to work in the illusion. To work in the illusion for Krishna. In other words, always remember your purpose in life. You know, why am I here? Just like another example, you're driving a car and you don't want to. I mean, you have to function nicely in the car. Sometimes it's like driving a car, you actually feel like you're part of the car. You become so accustomed, after you've been driving for many years, it's just like becomes an extension of the body. But still, you should remember you're not the car, you got to get out. At some time. So I think it's just a question of hearing the philosophy enough so we remember continually who we are and what we're doing here. Otherwise you'll be an illusion. To try to do everything for Krishna, understand why it's or how it's connected to Krishna. Different things. Okay, I think it's time to end because people getting falling asleep. I don't like to put people asleep. Yes, I don't put everyone to sleep and tuck them in bed at night or during Bhagavatam class. All glories to the divine grace, to the Prabhupada, Ki Jai.